නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually, you can remember that we are discussing some suttas which are related to calming down mental proliferation. So, in that theme, actually, I have taken several suttas. First of all, we understood how these different mental proliferation, so what we call as papancha, starts. So, that is well explained in the Madhupindika Sutta. And then we started to understand that it's a kind of a very refined process happening in our mind. At the beginning, it starts like a causal reaction when our sense faculties, including the mind, when they encounter their corresponding objects, that means eye with forms, ear with sounds, nose with smells, tongue with taste, body with the tactile sensations, and then the mind with the mind objects. So that actually leads to the rising of the corresponding consciousness. And when this process happens again and again, so it appears like these components are available for a long time. So that leads to the notion of contact, passa. And then that contact leads to the development of the feeling, and one start to recognize that, perceive it, and then we start thinking about it. So ultimately the thinking improves and we are thinking in many different ways, and it will lead to the mental proliferation. And then one become sort of a victim of that vicious cycle. So one is thinking and going on, and then one is fully overwhelmed by thinking, so obsessive thinking. And then we understood through the Indriya Bhavana Sutta how Buddha asked us to overcome these mental proliferations by means of the upekkha. So upekkha, in the sense here, it is not just the equanimity feeling, rather it's a fairly advanced, non-judgmental, and again sort of serene, equanimous state of mind, where nothing is grasped at that moment. So mind basically has the pure awareness, mere awareness, and nothing else. So basically mind does not grasp anything at all at that time, and it's an unassociated state. So Buddha recommends that as a kind of a refuge for the mind to stay again and again, to dwell again and again. As a result of that, he recommends leading to that state, or inclined towards that state as much as possible, and therefore we understood that practically we have to develop it. At the beginning it may take some time, but slowly we gain the skill so that we are able to develop such kind of a state which is leading to the calmness of the mind, freedom of the mind, freedom from the mental proliferation, freedom from wandering mind, freedom from sort of rumination. So it's a kind of a gradual process. Under that, actually, we discuss how a typical practitioner would do, considering the olarika sankata patisamuppanna, that is the understanding the gross nature of that conditioned state, and the prepared or fabricated kind of state, and then understanding the causal nature of that newly arisen state. And when it comes to a trainee, so he is fairly trained and fairly attuned, seasoned in this practice, so therefore he doesn't have to spend a lot of time. So he can quickly return back to that equanimous state just because that he doesn't welcome that excited state, or he does not welcome that newly arisen gross conditioned state. Rather, he tried to dwell in the unconditioned simple and again spacious, unbound and again non-grasping state. So this nature or this process we started. Now I thought of going a little further in the same theme. What are the other techniques that Buddha use in order to calm down mental proliferation? So as we can remember from Madhupindika Sutta, so mental proliferation is one of the result of too much thinking. So thinking, what the pondering and maybe rumination. So all these are certain characteristics that our minds are troubling with. And therefore, there are several suttas Buddha discuss how to overcome such kind of thinking. So one interesting sutta talking that aspect is the Dvedha Vitakka Sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya, and we can translate it as two kinds of thought. So this is a very interesting situation where Buddha explains how he practiced before he became enlightened. Now he very humbly explained how his mind was behaving before his enlightenment and what are the precautions he has taken, what are the remedies that he has taken, constructive methods that he has used in order to tame the mind, in order to calm down the mind, in order to restrain the mind. So he very beautifully mentioned in this sutta that while he was in Jetavanarama, so he addressed the bhikkhus and there he mentioned, so before he become the Buddha, he was the Buddha to be, Bodhisattva. So at that time he got an idea, so I better divide thoughts into two parts, divide thoughts into two classes. So one class basically are the wholesome thoughts, the other part basically are the unwholesome thoughts. So the idea is that he is now going to watch the mind, observe the mind, and whenever some kind of a thought arising in the mind, so he is recognizing whether it is wholesome or whether it is unwholesome. So there are three main types of unwholesome thoughts. Those are called kama vitakka. Those are the sensual desires. Then vihinsa vitakka, thoughts of ill will, sorry, cruelty. Then vyapada vitakka, that is the thoughts of ill will. Kama vitakka, vyapada vitakka, vihinsa vitakka, thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. So these are the unwholesome thoughts typically we have in our mind. So it's a kind of a general categorization. There may be various differences or slight variations, but still in general, these are the three types of unwholesome thoughts typically arise in our mind. Say for example, if we consider kama vitakka, thoughts related to the sensual desire. So it may be sensual desire that you are having to satisfy your eyes. You want to watch a movie, you want to go to see something, you want to see a newspaper, maybe a magazine or kind of a sight scenery. So this somehow we are trying to satisfy our desires through eyes. Similarly through the ears, I want to listen to some music, want to listen to some songs. So likewise, through the ears, we are trying to satisfy our desires. So likewise, using the five senses, we are trying to satisfy our desires. So this is the sense desire. So this is a kind of a constant struggle to satisfy the desires, to gratify senses. It's a kind of a pressure principle that we all are involved with. So typically, majority of the people are going after that kind of pressure, I mean, acting according to such pressure principle. Now, whenever Buddha to be, the Bodhisattva understood, okay, his mind is now in trying to entertain such sensual desire, so he recognized. Similarly, he mentioned whenever his mind trying to think of something ill will, some sort of hateful thought, angry thought, so that also he recognized and he put it to that category. So these are unwholesome thoughts. Similarly, if there is any kind of a cruel thought arisen in his mind, he recognized it, understood it and put it to the unwholesome side. And again, there is an interesting point here. So he understood the repercussions. He understood the consequences. What happened if he continued to think in these unwholesome thoughts? Say, for example, if you are thinking about according to the sensual desires, so Buddha say that it is leading to one's own affliction, and it may lead to the affliction of others, and again to the affliction of both, and again it obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and again leads away from Nibbana. Now say for example, there was no sensual desire in a particular time, but due to some reason that you saw something beautiful, now you are being attracted towards that. It may be a man, it may be a woman, it may be a beautiful thing, whatever it is. So basically mind being attracted towards such object. So now you lost your balance. Assume that you are trying to keep your mind quite balanced, peaceful, non-attached. So very fairly a spacious kind of a beautiful conducive state. But after you saw someone, after you hear someone or something, so this might change. So again you are lost, you have lost your equilibrium. Now again and again, now mind start to associate and trying to enjoy or try to find delight in that object. So that again some unarisen lust now going to arise. Previously there was no lust, but now lust is arising. Now you start to burn through lust. So therefore Buddha mentioned it is leading to the kind of downfall of one's own well-being. Previously mind was quite calm, peaceful, but now it is burning. So therefore it leads to my own affliction. So Bodhisattva understood, so whenever if I promote this sensual desire, it will slowly bring me to the affliction, burning of the mind. And again assume that if you are entertaining and find delight in such thought, probably you may go after that person or going after that particular thing, you are being attracted to him or her. So likewise, suppose, I mean, he also be in a trouble, so suppose he is a married person, he or she is a married person, and now you have some sort of obsessive thoughts related to him or her, now you are going after him, going after her. Now that person is also in trouble because he's already married, she is already married. Now there are unnecessary sort of conflicts going to arise. Now you understand the repercussions. What is going to happen to the other party? Because now you got a desire towards that person, but unfortunately he's already married. Now you going after him or her is no use, pointless. Now unnecessary problems are now going to arise. So likewise, so Buddha says, so the Bodhisattva understood, if I am proceeding with this kind of thinking, it may not only harmful to me, but also harmful to the other side, to the other person. Suppose as a monk has completely sort of given up those kind of sensual desires, have to. So he's trying to live a kind of a celibate life. But still, when a sensual desire arises, if he try to follow it, and if he is trying to contact the person to whom that he has made a kind of a desire, then everything become kind of confused, because it is not ethical in a way. A monk contacting another person with the wrong motives. So likewise, a monk or practitioner, whenever he is trying to sort of develop the mind, so he is understanding if one leads to this kind of sensual desires, if he is promoting it, so it is leading to the downfall of his own and again making troubles to the others. And further Buddha mentioned, it obstructs wisdom. Now, in order for the wisdom to arise, as we discussed, so we have to have a kind of a calm mind. We have to have a very spacious mind, a sort of clear mind. The clarity of mind is a must in order to have good wisdom. It is not that we are thinking and trying to get sort of a wisdom, that is also one aspect. But here particularly, so when the mind is crowded with various sensual desires, so then it's very unlikely that you are going to improve wisdom. And on the other hand, the opposite may going to happen. Suppose that you already have certain insights and your mind is, just because of that, you are able to maintain in a serene sort of an equilibrium without much attachment, without any burning. But now, because of this sensual desire, now you are basically going to destroy that wisdom which you have, developed through a lot of difficulties, through a lot of hardships. Suppose you went through a kind of a retreat, you spend the whole day, wake up in the morning. So likewise, you did a lot of contribution, but ultimately when you come home and start to enjoy various things, enjoy sensual desires, so then probably it might lead to the sort of gradual decaying of all those beautiful states that you already achieved. So you understand that the danger, what's going to happen to the wisdom, what's going to happen to the concentration, what's going to happen to the mindfulness which you have already earned, which I already developed because of the association of these kind of sensual thoughts. And then further Buddha mentioned that leads away from Nibbana, because Nibbana is basically a calming and non-attached sort of a state that according to the teaching, but now your mind being attached, it's going away from Nibbana. And again, instead of having a cool, calm state, now again the mind start to agitate and mind start to burn. Either may be lust, either may be anger. So likewise, so when we understand the consequences of this kind of thinking, the unwholesome thinking, then so mind sort of get educated, or mind get learned about the these disadvantages. It's a matter of educating the mind. It's very much like we are trying to educate a little child. So he at the beginning doesn't know that say something is not good. So as parents, as say teachers, you have to warn him. You have to make him aware about the danger. So similarly, here also the Bodhisattva mentioned that whenever such thoughts come into the mind, so he understood the danger, and accordingly he now categorizing them into the unwholesome group. So similarly, when he is thinking like that, or when he is pondering like that, when he understand like the that kind of danger, then he mentioned that slowly those thoughts start to disappear. Attabhyadayapi sangvattati, parabhyadayapi sangvattati, ubhayabhyadayapi sangvattati, panya nirodhiko, vighata pakkiko, anibbana sangvattaniko. So these are all the consequences. So it is leading to your own destruction or the downfall. It is leading to someone else's downfall. It is leading to both's downfall. And again, panya nirodhiko, it is going to the waxing of the wisdom, the decaying of the wisdom, disappearance of the wisdom. And it is vigata pakkiko, it is sort of producing some suffering. And anibbana sangvattaniko, it is taking you away from nibbana. So more you understand that, so if you are able to educate the mind in this respect, so basically, so mind may not continue in thinking like that. Sensual thought may arise and you are mindful about it, and now you sort of give a sort of an education to the mind, warning to the mind, if you are leading in thinking like this, these are the consequences. These are the repercussions. These are the disadvantages. So you are educating the mind. You are making, you are sort of warning the mind about the danger. So then Buddha mentioned, so when he understood like that, the sensual desire in him started to decay, started to remove. Uppannanam kama vitakkam pajahameva vinodameva byantameva nam akasi. Now he is slowly abandoning it, removing it, and did away with it. And this procedure is common to kama vitakka, so that is the sensual desires which we discussed, and then it can be used to ill will, vyapada vitakka, and it also can be used with the vihinsa vitakka, that is the thoughts of cruelty. Now we have certain sort of sometimes frustration about a person, kind of a resistance towards a person, anger towards a person, ill will towards a person. So if we are trying to keep it in our mind, so we are the ones going to burn, we are the ones going to suffer, and we are the ones going to lose what we have already developed, maybe mindfulness, maybe concentration, maybe wisdom, what we have earned so far because of our own practice. So we sort of warn the mind, so don't associate these kind of thoughts, because it is harmful to you, it is harmful to the other person, and harmful to the both sides. And when you are thinking, you start to burn, you start to suffer, and again you are going away from Nibbana. And when you are understanding these consequences, Buddha mentioned, okay, the sensual desires start to disappear, and so the mind is start to free from them, and you have removed them, did away from them. So he is applying the same technique to all different types of unwholesome thoughts. And there's a very interesting statement Buddha mentioned here. It is very much kind of a psychological statement. Yanya deva bhikkave bhikkhu bahulam annu vitakketi anu vichareti tatha tatha nati hoti chetaso. So what it means is that what you think more and more, to which, to that direction your mind going to incline. Say for example that you are thinking too much of sensual desires, then your mind get inclined towards sensual desires. The next time you don't need to purposely think, but the mind itself start to think. Now your mind being conditioned. Now it is very much like a learned behavior. Say you are again and again thinking about some sensual desires. You are promoting it. You are burning with it. You are even mentally proliferate with it. You fabricate with it. You are going for various fantasies. Now your mind is fairly thinking in that direction. It's difficult to avoid now even, because you have trained the mind to think in that sense. So this is a very dangerous state in one way, because we feel that it's a kind of an innocent process. I didn't go to any kind of adultery or any kind of sexual harassment or something like that. But I am thinking and enjoying. But so that is how the mind become conditioned in that sort of wrong way of thinking. Now suppose you are again and again thinking about someone, about his wrong deeds, or that what he did wrong to you, and what are the wrong, bad qualities he has. So likewise, whenever you are thinking again and again on that person, then your mind become conditioned. Now you can't see even the good side of that person, because you are programmed the mind in a way. You have trained the mind in a way to think the opposite. So mind become inclined towards that direction. So this is a kind of a mental state that we are dealing with. So whatever the angle that we are associating with, or whatever the kind of stream of thought that we are associating with, so mind start to take that as a kind of a norm, as a kind of a pattern of thinking. Now, When Buddha understood this, so there he understand another repercussion of the whole scenario. So when he is thinking about say unwholesome, say sensual desire, so he understand, okay, if I am continue to think like this, so my mind become conditioned, my mind become programmed, my mind become sort of inclined towards that way of thinking. So it is quite harmful to me, harmful to the others, harmful to both sides, and it will destroy the wisdom, and it is taking me away from Nibbana. So it's a kind of an insight that we can have, and again kind of a precaution we can have, we have to have, and accordingly we have to associate the opposite. Now, suppose that you are thinking too much about ill will, thoughts of ill will, then your temperament become onto that side. So you become a short-tempered person. Whatever is even a small thing, slightest thing, you become angry, because your mind being conditioned in that direction. Similarly, suppose you are entertaining too many thoughts of cruelty, harming others, again and again thinking about how to harm another person to get the revenge. So your mind being conditioned in that way of thinking. Now while driving, you may start to think about him, how to harm the other person. Say while waiting for someone, you are thinking like that. Say while in a queue, suppose you have gone to the bank and you are in the queue, and now the mind start to thinking how to get the revenge. Suppose you are even watching movie, but your mind being thinking something else, that is trying to find various ways and means how to get the revenge, because now your mind being inclined towards that sort of vihinsa vitakka, the thoughts of cruelty. So therefore we have to be very careful in how to handle our mind. So it's very much like we are training a child. So you know, certain terrorist organizations, they are training children to commit suicide bombers. So because those are innocent children, and you can actually brainwash them. So similarly here, so mind is also something that very powerful, but if you are misusing it, if you are putting it in the wrong direction, so ultimately the person who is handling that mind is going to suffer. So if we are using our own mind in the wrong direction, so we are going to suffer. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, so whenever his mind thinking about nekkhamma vitakka, thoughts of renunciation, so there he understood, okay, this is a wholesome thought. Whenever his mind is thinking of loving kindness, so he understood this is a wholesome thought. Whenever his mind is start to think about, say, being kind, some compassionate thought, so he understood this is a wholesome thought. It is not harmful to me. And it is not harmful to another person. It is not harmful to both sides. And it may not lead to the destruction or degradation of the wisdom. And it is not taking me away from Nibbana. So now the advantages of the wholesome thoughts, now Buddha is understanding, or rather the Bodhisattva is understanding. Now you can see how genuinely, or how frankly he has explained that his own different techniques that he used as a Bodhisattva. Because you can see, I mean, even his mind sometimes had enjoyed various different sensual thoughts, ill will thoughts, sort of thoughts of cruelty. But he understood now these are not good. These are harmful to me. These are harmful to the other person. These are harmful to both sides. And this may sort of reduce already arisen wisdom, and again bring me away from the Nibbana, because he is in search of Nibbana. But unfortunately, this way of thinking not lead into that. Instead, it is taking away from Nibbana. So he apply these theories. I mean, it is not merely a theory, but rather he is practically trying to apply it. Now the opposite happens when the thoughts of renunciation is arising. So there he understood they are not harmful, they are not leading away from Nibbana, rather it is making me closer to the Nibbana. So likewise he is now promoting wholesome thoughts. Now again the thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of compassion, kindness. Now he understood they are not harmful to me, harmful to another person, not harmful to the both sides, and not lead into any kind of a degradation of wisdom, and does not bring away from the Nibbana. So he understood that. Now, there's another interesting point highlighted here. Now, he understood the wholesome states. When he is associating, it is going to sort of cleanse in the mind. So when the mind is associating unwholesome thoughts, so it is basically polluting the mind. But when he is associating wholesome thoughts, they are sort of cleanse in the mind. So therefore he is more and more trying to cleanse the mind instead of harming the mind, instead of polluting the mind, instead of burning the mind. Now, this has to be felt. So, Buddha has mentioned it, but these states have to be felt by each individual. So, when we are associating unwholesome thoughts, we have to understand, okay, the mind getting polluted. Mind becomes somewhat crowded, somewhat congested, somewhat restricted. So, I feel stressed. I feel tensed. So likewise, you yourself have to understood that through your own introspection. But on the opposite, when you are thinking, say, renunciative thoughts, thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of compassion, so there you understand a kind of a positive atmosphere being developed in the mind. So you feel calm. You feel sort of somewhat happy, and the day can be spent without much trouble, and you can associate others with less trouble, so the relationships become smooth, so mutual understanding is there, so you start to kind of forgiving, and your mental well-being is there. So likewise, so this is something that we have to reflect in our own mind. I mean, no point of just keeping it just to the theory, but we have to practically understand the advantages of when thinking the wholesome side and when abandoning the unwholesome thoughts. Now there's another very interesting point. Even the wholesome thoughts, now suppose you are able to avoid as much as possible the unwholesome thoughts, the thinking of all unwholesome thoughts. Now you are trying to only think the wholesome thoughts. Say for example, in practical sense, suppose previously your mind was associated too much ill will. Now you start to practice loving kindness meditation, metta meditation. So you are practicing it again and again, and you find it very beautiful and you feel happy. So as much as possible during the daytime, you are practicing loving kindness. During the evening, you are trying to practice loving kindness. During the night, you are trying to practice loving kindness, metta. Fine, no problem. Now, slowly, so the previous agitation, previous sort of burning in the mind start to reduce, and you start to feel happy. You start to feel somewhat calm. Because now thinking is going on, but the thinking is with respect to the wholesome side, loving kindness thoughts. But later, once you come, you may reach a state, even this thinking, though they are wholesome thoughts, makes you little tired, makes you little troubled, makes you feel burdened. So Buddha very beautifully mentioned here, but with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. And when the body is tired, the mind becomes strained. And when the mind is trained, it is far from concentration. Now, it is true that you have replaced unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts. Now you are trying to think as much as possible the wholesome thoughts. But when you start to overthink, and even when you are now completely avoiding unwholesome thoughts and only think the wholesome thoughts, while the mind become more mindful and fairly sensitive, you may understand, okay, even thinking about the wholesome thoughts, occupying the mind with wholesome thoughts, makes me tired, makes even the body feeling tired. So there's a very interesting finding here Buddha mentioned. It's a kind of practical thing there Buddha mentioned, that achitiraṁ anuvitakkayato anuvicārayato kāyo kilameya kāyo kilante cittaṁ uhanyaya uhate citte ara cittaṁ samādhinhāti achitiraṁ anuvitakkayato. When you are thinking too much, excessive thinking, it's wholesome thoughts, but you are thinking it too much. Anuvicharyato, so you are keeping your mind more and more, sustaining your mind more and more in the wholesome thoughts. Maybe wholesome objects. Suppose you do Buddha Anusati. Suppose you do Metta. Those are wholesome thoughts. But it also leads to the refinement of the mind. Sensitivity is improving, mindfulness improving. And you may lead a state that this thinking is now become a burden. Now it is difficult to bear. You feel sort of tired in thinking. And the body also feel tired. And when the mind and the body feeling tired, and Buddha mentioned the concentration going away and going far and far, going away. So you are going away from the concentration. So now what to do? You have to keep the mind quiet. You got to stop thinking. Because it won't be much difficult, because now the mind is fairly trained. Now it is trying to think only the positive side. It is now trying to think only the positive thoughts or the wholesome thoughts. Now it's a matter of slowly calming it down. You may have to do it gradually, not immediately. Suppose, say for example, you were practicing loving kindness meditation throughout the day. And as a result of that, now you feel calm. There are no thoughts of ill will. Maybe even you practice asubha bhavana. So there are no thoughts of kama chanda, sensual desires. So likewise, you are systematically, you are training the mind. But once you reach some state, you need to check. Is it possible to stop, reduce this? Reduce in the sense, suppose you were practicing metta throughout the day, now how about practicing it less and see how the mind is behaving? It doesn't mean that you now start to think the opposite. Rather, you keep the mind quiet, free from inner chatter. And you may actually have to find something more subtle, like anapanasati, like elements meditation. Because now you are further improving the mind. So those types of meditation does not require any kind of thinking. Rather, it's a silent observation, concentrated observation. So whenever your mind is occupying with that kind of silent and sort of precise observation, so you can let go of even the wholesome thoughts. Say for example, you can reduce metta bhavana or buddha anusati, but you can increase the time of anapanasati. Anapanasati is a kind of a neutral object, and your mind become less thinking, and it become kind of a sharp observing. Very accurate, precise observing is there. So Buddha mentioned here, ajjattameva cittaṁ sannisthāni. Ajjattameva cittaṁ santapemi, sannisādemi, ekodin karomi, samādhāmi, tankisahetu, Mame chittang uhanya titi. Now he understood, even when I am thinking wholesome thoughts excessively, the mind feel tired, the body feel tired. So let me simply keep the mind quiet and fairly somewhat anchored towards the body. So the mind is associating the body without thinking. Suppose you are walking, mind associate the walking posture. While you are sitting, the mind associate sitting posture. While different sensations are there in the body, so mind associate those sensations, but no thinking. So you are silently observing. So this is where we can say, now one may lead to the vipassana, because slowly this silent observation, continuous observation, makes you to deeper understandings. It is not that you are trying to think and get the understanding. That is one aspect of knowledge. But here, you are now coming to the bhavanamaya panya, where your mind is quiet, concentrated, mindful, and using that, you are constantly observing various phenomena arising at this very moment. Mind is quiet and less distractions. Mind wandering has almost stopped, but it is associating the body. Various bodily phenomena are now being observed carefully. So this is very interesting point that we need to understand. So when you start to practice kayanupassana, so this sort of gradual systematic approach, if you are using, then you slowly come to this state. At the beginning, you categorize the thoughts, wholesome, unwholesome. You understood the repercussions, consequences of the unwholesome thoughts. So you abandon them. Now you start to promote the thinking of wholesome thoughts. Basically, you have replaced unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts. Now you are practicing it. More and more, you are associating wholesome thoughts. And you may reach the state that even thinking wholesome thoughts feel tired. At that time, you are reducing these different thinking of wholesome thoughts. Rather, you start to calm down the mind, keep the mind onto some neutral object, and start to do a kind of an investigation. You now try to practice insight meditation in a way, using a very quiet mind, without thinking. So you do sort of observation, silent observation. And that will lead to further understanding. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session, so we can discuss some more aspects, some other interesting points that Buddha highlight in this sutta next week. Now I like to open the session for questions.